Welcome to the DL Gaming Podcast. I'm Bobby.
I'm Nick.
I'm Steve.
I'm already saucy, so I've been drinking for about an hour and a half. We'll see where we end up. We'll see how many times I can sneak out of here and get a drink. I need you guys to talk long and boring so I can like sneak out and nobody's going to notice. So that's my plan. And
keep getting
drunker and drunker. Yeah.
All right. Well, joining us today is a new person here, Steve, also known as Media Hype Train. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you for having me on, guys.
Absolutely.
You guys might know him by Pharaoh Steve on the Discord. He has been around for shit, dude. At least 4 years,
I would say. Very long. All the way back to the original. Well, not the original because it was you and Bob first, but the once you brought on
Chad.
Man, I can't. Yeah, once you guys brought on Chad. Chaz Mobile Corner, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
It's way back.
When we had Chi on, she said something like, we should have something like Chad's Mobile Corner. And then we ended up using that as a sound bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Somebody turned it into a jingle. One of our listeners turned it into a...
Our first jingle was Chi going, Chad's Mobile Corner. And then we were bing, boom, or whatever it was. Yeah. I should talk. I've been playing a couple of mobile games, but I'll put it on for next week. We have a loaded show this week.
Yeah. All right. So, long-time listener, first-time caller, Steve joining us. And you also do your own thing, too. Like, you got your own whole YouTube channel, and I assume you stream as well.
Yeah, not so much the streaming anymore, just really the schedule. You know, being the consistency, I don't have that. But YouTube, mm-hmm. I do that pretty regularly. Not a daily uploader, but I would probably say once every couple weeks. Me and Nick were actually talking before we started here that I really try to focus on review type content, add-ons. So when the industry is kind of slow, I'm kind of slow. I don't do the meme stuff, so I don't put a video out unless I really have something to kind of talk about.
Mm-hmm. What games?
Right now, Microsoft Flight Simulator is really big on my channel. A lot of content around that. It's funny you guys were making fun of the nerds with the whole desk setup last week. I was like, yeah, that's me. But I've always been into the space sim, so you guys know Star Citizen, Elite Dangerous, and then actually we'll probably talk about it a little bit later, but Everspace 2 has really been on my radar recently.
So what is your setup like? What do you have? What are peripherals that the usual, you know, a first person shooter guy doesn't have?
So I'm looking left to right. So I've got the Oculus Rift S with the touch controllers. I got the Logitech X56 HOTAS, which is a throttle on one side and a flight stick on the other. I've got the Xbox Series 2 Elite for some games that kind of you can map some of the features to kind of emulate a mouse or a keyboard. And that's really it about peripherals. That really kind of covers me across everything that I play at the moment. The only thing that I would really want would probably be a racing wheel. You know, kind of get back into the American Truck Simulator or the Pharma Simulator stuff. But
I was about to ask you, and like, have you ever seen those racing wheels that people customize? Like, you know, you got your normal racing wheel supposed to have like your IndyCar like steering wheel and shit. But have you ever seen the ones that people customize that have like the big rig or like the bus steering wheel? Those are fucking crazy.
It's insane. If I wish I lived in the north where I could have a basement, I would totally deck my basement out to be just like a sim corner. You know, have a flight sim corner here, have a racing corner over there, but. Yeah, don't really get that benefit in Florida.
Have a plow and like a tractor, have a, you know, farming simulator.
How good or how bad was Farming Simulator? Did you play it?
I did. It depends on the type of gamer you are. Honestly, like me, I really like that simulation type stuff. I like the monotony of, you know, having to plan out resource management.
Right.
Me and my friends who were actually in the chat, we were talking a couple weeks ago, there's this game, I forgot what it's called, it's like Ranch Simulator, but it's a co-op game where you manage a ranch together. And like that seems so mundane, but it's cool to me because it's all about that kind of like the finance, the management, the business management piece. Like that stuff really gets me going.
Yeah. It's definitely, I feel like mostly people don't dabble in simulation that much. It's either you're all in or it's not for you at all. Like I like to Call me crazy, but I'm a classicist. I like to shoot zombies in the head with shotguns. But that's me. Bobby dabbles a little bit in simulation, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of depends because some of them really get into it. But yeah, I mean, I grew up on all those sim games.
Yeah.
Sim Farm, love that game. Classic.
Yeah.
But Amila, you were big on Civ at one point, weren't you?
I wouldn't say big, but I've played most. I didn't play Civ 6, but I've played like 3, 4, 5. And, you know, dude, I think any human being that understands the interface can do the one more turn, one more turn. Like, it definitely grabs you, for sure. I won't say that I'm immune to that. But, you know, that's the transcendent one. That's the one that, like, everybody knows about. That's the one that, like, has global appeal. It's the technical ones that I get lost in the weeds, and I'm like, is this a spreadsheet? Like, I do that at work. Like, I don't need that. That doesn't need to happen here.
Do you do spreadsheets at work?
You'd be surprised.
Really?
Yeah. I don't do them. I have to read them.
You don't do them. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What do you call it? You guys know, like, what country has the highest sim players per capita, right?
Russia.
Brazil.
Korea.
Germany.
Germany?
Makes sense.
I was guessing about the train simulator and Euro Truck Simulator and farming simulator.
Well, I could see that. Like, but I guess Brazil because of Football Manager. I know that's huge in soccer countries.
Yeah.
Is that really like a sim? I would guess so,
That's a super hardcore. Yeah. And that's what I'm talking about the hardcore simulation games that I can't do. And it's unfortunate because all the good baseball games on PC are those types of games. You know, we don't get MLB The Show on PC. So...
What about that? What about Crusader Kings and stuff like that? Do you play that as well, Steve?
I haven't. My friend Batfish in the chat there, I see him recommending Crusader King 3.
Yeah.
I want to. I definitely do. Same with like Divinity. Like, it's just such a large scope of a game. I know that it's going to pull me in, and I just don't have the time for it at the moment. But it's one of the things I would absolutely love to. Especially Crusader Kings. You guys were talking about that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. I really wanted to watch or play Crusader Kings 2. And then I famously watched a 40-minute video on a how-to, went back to the game, and was completely lost still. So I never, it just never clicked, less than clicked. It was like, I don't know. I felt like a baboon with boxing gloves on. Like, the controls, I don't know. I don't know what to do. Yeah.
I need, if I get like a week off of work where I can, you know, I like a staycation, I'll definitely throw myself into it because then I could really learn everything. But I just hate throwing myself into something where I know I really need to know the in-depth systems to really get the most out of it, you know.
And before we get the show on the road, how do we find you on YouTube?
You can, I think it's just youtube.com/MediaHypeTrain. You can search Media Hype Train, it should pull me right up.
Cool.
And then, of course, if
we got it up on the screen here. Yeah, we'll link that in the show notes as well.
Yeah, sounds good.
Very cool.
Yeah,
want to get the show on the road?
Yeah, let's do it. You know, before we get into it, though, I just wanted to plug this. So starting on February 19th, me, Sniper, a few other people from Discord have started a weekly playthrough, kind of an RPG or role-playing of Pulsar Lost Colony. And we need two more people. So if you're interested... You know, definitely check that out. It's posted on our Discord Fridays, 7 p.m. PST, probably going to do about 2 hours a week, maybe more. But we always talk about Pulsar and how it's such a great game, but we never really get around to playing it except for short bursts. So we're going to try to do it kind of like, I guess, a D&D session where you just commit once a week, certain time, same time every week, and we'll make it happen. I'm probably going to be streaming that too. So if you want to check that out, just... I guess the best way to find anybody's stream is to go on our Discord and you see it right there in the top right corner, who's ever streaming.
Yep.
Speaking of streaming, Chi, who's not here today, she couldn't make it. She's back at work, so schedule problems. But she's been streaming a lot more. And she also streamed that game we were talking about not too long ago, Amori.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it looked really cool. I watched a bit of the stream, and it really does look like an awesome game. I might check that out.
I believe you talked about it. She wrote it down, and then she probably ended up playing it.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think she... We talked about it on an episode that she was not on, so I think she found out about it some other way.
How about she listens to us because she likes us, Bobby?
Yeah, Bobby. Have confidence in your co-host.
It was like simultaneous. Like she had already known about it. Yeah, it was like this really cool looking RPG, great reviews on Steam. So she was streaming that not too long ago. But yeah, she's been pretty consistent about streaming. So be a part of the Discord, guys.
Sounds good. I got the show notes up, Bob.
Where are the show? Oh, yeah. There we go. Thanks. All right. So on the radar, our wonderful on the radar section that is back in business now. We're going to talk about games that we're excited about, but we haven't played yet. First up is Democracy 4. And Steve, yeah, this was your pick.
That was me. So again, kind of going back to that whole simulation theme. I'm sure everybody's probably tired of the whole political landscape right now in the media, but those games are still really fun to play. So I came across this one, and the thing I really liked about it is that they have multiple countries simulated, so Spain and the U.S. right now, and it depicts like how the actual elections take place in that country. It has all these social issues, and a lot of it is kind of, it's real complex. So you have the piece, just like in American politics, of you've got to balance this budget, but you also have the piece of balancing popularity to get reelected. So I've played other games like Civ. You know, obviously you're doing the same thing. You're, you know, managing a piece of area. You're bringing it up with the times, all of that. But this is the first where I've seen where you also have to kind of balance that popularity of your people as well against that. So I think it'd add a kind of an interesting gameplay mechanic to it.
It's interesting that it's like, it's the modern problems that the country's having. So is it, it's probably, I feel like it's going to be like a MLB 2020, MLB 2021, where like every year they could do this, or they could do it every 2 years or whatever it is, but they could do modern problems, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm glad you brought that up because it is in early access, I think in October of last year, but they just had an update in January where they added another country and they add all these policies. So that absolutely is something they keep doing, is to keep adding the different policies and other things in there that keep it kind of interesting. But even just having that, that complexity of going out, you know, every X amount of years for the reelection, I think that'd give it a bit of longevity and replay value.
Yeah, for sure. And then it's funny because they could, like, if when I play the United States part, I'd be like, oh yeah, that's all close to home. And then they do Spain, they could just make shit up. It's like, holy shit, they were visited by aliens last year. I had no idea.
Yeah,
I would be like, oh yeah, that happened in Spain. I'd be talking to people like it was real shit.
You're like 2 weeks into the playthrough, you're like, grapefruits are insane in Spain, damn it.
So I want to, I'm probably gonna pick that up in the next week or so. I got some downtime to throw a couple hours at it.
What's this cost?
It is $26.99 on Steam.
God, it's good to see American prices there.
Oh my God, no more fucking Monopoly money.
Yeah.
Now, I do have Democracy 3. I think I picked it up in some sort of sale or Humble Bundle or something a long time ago. Have not played it. The developer of Academia School Simulator, I follow him on Twitter. We interviewed him maybe about a year ago or so. He has been posting a lot about this game recently. He is like really deep into Democracy 4. And, you know, he made School Simulator, so of course he's kind of big on these sim games.
Yeah.
But I know he's really... really enjoying it. Folks, you know, wanted to check this out.
You know, ultimately, it is just the whole thing's a game, right? Getting elected and all that stuff. It's a game of sorts. The guy that Joe Rogan had on before, he guessed the entire election exactly how it was going to go up until one. He was off by 1 point at the very end. But he had foresaw the whole thing, how these certain states were going to go and then look this way at this point and then look at this at this point.
But I think a lot of people did, though. Like, maybe not to the T, but everybody already kind of knew, like, what was going to happen because they pull the hell out of those, you know? Yeah. So they already know, which is, you know, I mean, months before the elective happened, the election happened, I think people kind of knew which way it was going.
Bobby, the stream cut out. You guys are offline.
Stream is disconnected, attempting to reconnect, and yet we are still working here. Reconnect.
Yeah, no. Like a pop, and then it went away.
Look at Be Right Back, folks. What a pro.
Reconnecting. Is your internet cut out? I mean, we're talking on.
Yeah, we're talking
you
to them.
You both streams cut out, your Twitch stream and you guys in Discord, and then you guys came back first, and I'm thinking Discord. I mean, thinking Twitch is picking you guys back up right now.
Okay, yeah, well, I'm trying to connect again. I think we're back now.
Let me refresh.
Yeah, refresh that. Let me know, but I think we're
back up. I see everybody's pretty faces. Okay,
there we go.
Weird.
You know, in general, we're like pretty good about like little hiccups about that. We've been lucky, is what I'm saying. In general,
yeah, mm-hmm.
It's definitely happened, but like there was a stint there on PC Gamer where like they would interview people on Skype and it was just or whatever they were using, and it was just I couldn't even listen to it. Like one of the guys was remote, and the audio was terrible.
Yeah, the remote were never that great. And you know, with COVID, a lot of the podcasts that I listen to, what they've done is if the person doesn't already have equipment, they send the equipment to the person. Yeah. And then beforehand, you know, they set everything, they talk them through setting everything up. They do the clap before, and then they're basically recording their track on their end. And then they send it to them and then they sync it. So they don't use that remote audio, which is a lot more work, but the audio quality, like you can't even tell, the timing's a little off, you know, cause there's not that immediacy of being in the same room, but
like right now, Steve's sitting on my lap and Nick's on your lap. That's why we're getting great audio right now.
Yeah. All right. So Democracy 4. Yeah. One of these days I'm going to play a Democracy game.
You play Tropico in the day, back in the day, right?
Oh, yeah. I played a lot of Tropico 4 and I got Tropico 5 thinking that I was going to get right into it and love it. And then I just never even started it. And then when Tropico 6... Yeah, kind of in the same vein a little bit. Well, I don't know. This looks a little more complex. Like, I'm looking at a lot of these things, and it's a lot of bar charts, a lot of graphs, a lot of statistics. Tropico definitely has more of, like, a, you know, it's got that isometric view. You can zoom in on people. You can see your character walking around. And
yeah. A little more casual, sim-friendly.
Yeah, definitely. And the way they do their campaign is pretty cool. They kind of work you up to the bigger stuff, which is very helpful. It just really sucks trying to get back into these games because you totally forget what you were doing or how to do everything.
That's such a drag with complex games because usually complex games are some of the most fun. And then if you put it down for a little while, you come back and you have to relearn. But again, just like Doom, you're halfway through, so you there's no tutorial mode again. Maybe you should just go back and play the tutorial and then go back to your save.
No, especially if it's been that long. I mean, at this point, I could start fresh with Tropico 5. And I don't know which one is the best one. Tropico 4 was really good. I really enjoyed that one. And I'm assuming 5 and 6 were more of the same, maybe a little bit better in certain ways. I know one of them, they started adding some sort of like multiplayer component to it.
I'm sure Metacritic will suss this out for us.
Yeah. maybe, but why go down that road? Nick, you got something to say?
Yeah. So, Steve, I got a question. Like, I'm looking at Democracy 4 and everything, and I'm looking at, like, the tendency of charts and things like that. Have you ever tried playing, like, EVE Online?
I have. I didn't like EVE, though, because what it said, they're at odds, like the space combat. And the space gameplay is at odds with the actual gameplay loop. I'm like, I was saying earlier, that is absolutely a spreadsheet simulator. To the point, you know, where the larger the battle is, the slower time, you know, starts moving and things. It's not for me. Like what I'll do instead is like, I'll play Elite Dangerous. And when it comes to wanting that sim piece, I'll like optimize a trait route or something like that. You know,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't do EVE Online. Before we move on, quick shout out to Epic Tryhard Face, 17 month sub, long time.
Fuck yeah.
Thanks, dude.
Good job. Thank you.
Awesome. Also, Nick gifted someone a sub too earlier in the show.
Every day or every time we stream.
All right. Okay. A game I wanted to mention really quick, Evil Genius 2, World Domination. So this is a game that I'm very excited for. Again, another kind of strategy game, but extremely casual. This is like that base building game where you're building, you're the bad guy. You're the bad guy in like The Incredibles or a James Bond movie or something. You build your lair. Or actually, you know, a great analogy would be the Venture Bros, if you've seen that. You're like the bad guys. You're like the Monarch and the Venture Bros. You know, you're building your own secret lair in your private island. It looks fantastic. This is a remake of a game that I never played back in the early 2000s. We've talked about it a bunch, but it just recently announced its release date, March 30th. This game is coming out, so not too far away.
Yeah, not too bad at all. 2 months. So you play, like, you have the lair, and then heroes try to infiltrate your lair? Is that what's going on, or are you just trying to take over the world? Do you know how
I think it's like both. Because from parts, I never played the first one, by the way. But from what I've seen, there's like, you do have to like set up your lair to capture the good guys or the operatives that are sneaking in and trying to like steal stuff from you or destroy you. But you're also trying to do stuff outside of your base, like take over the world.
Simultaneous stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
I'm also hearing something in the background. Who is that?
Nick, there's some audio coming from you.
Is there? Okay, no. Let me give me a second.
There, no.
No, I don't think it's him.
Oh, no, he's muted.
Man, we're fucking going nuts over here.
It's got to be something. No, I don't think it is you, Nick. There's got to be something else in a... There it goes.
So, I, because it's in the aspect adventure, and you said, did you guys see that meme this week for the Wall Street Bet situation where it's Brock and he's like, he's doing like the weird Tai Chi in the middle of the street, and if he puts his hands down forward and he puts his other hands to his side, and it's like me getting back into training, and then he falls back into the car and he crushes the person driving the car, and he just drives it for every, like, just on the way through.
No idea.
Do you guys have any, like, did you guys trade anything this week or last week?
Yeah, man. I did pretty well with AMC this week. Should we talk about this whole thing?
The Wall Street situation? Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't know if we even need to explain it, because everybody should know what's going on.
All right. I did fine with AMC. I bought low and sold high. So in about 3 hours, I made $200 while I was working anyway on AMC, because I was taking advantage of the dips while it was overall going up. So that was cool. And then we got to wait till Monday until the markets go back on. So that's where I'm at. I'm not sure what's going on after that. Apparently, Dogecoin is going to be the next thing. Apparently, basically what people figured out is if we all work together and buy one thing, we can drive the price up. And so if we can focus everybody's attention on one thing, we might make money together, is kind of what's going on. And yeah.
Yeah, that's the idea.
To interrupt real quick, on Twitch, me and Steve's videos are paused.
Yeah.
I was wondering why you were invisible.
All right, I'm going to try to lower the bit rate here. We've had a pretty good luck at streaming at a 1080p, but it just seems like lately that has not been...
I jinxed us. I don't believe in jinxes, but I jinxed us. Hey, we never had problems over here at the DLG. And then it's frozen.
Except today. All right, I'm going to try this, too. I'll try using a closer server. Although...
Bobby, I put up that GIF under Cheese show notes, so I don't sound like a fucking crazy person. So if you want to put it on stream, you can.
Yeah, I will click on that.
And we're back. Among the Chaos, Drillbit subbed. I mean, that's
what's up.
Damn, that's awesome.
Very cool. All right, the next game I want to talk about is called Valheim. At least I think that's how you pronounce it. This game, I think it's on Steam's like top or like new and interesting list or something like that. Some people were talking about it. It might have been posted in Discord as well. This is an exploration and survival game for 1 to 10 players, and it's got this Viking setting. So you run around this environment, you build, battle, conquer. Kind of everything you would do in a crafting survival, but it is built to be a cooperative experience for 1 to 10 players. And I've really been favoring the multiplayer, the co-op games, because it's been pretty consistent. Every Friday, I've been playing with the community. It's been a lot of Killing Floor 2, a lot of Deep Rock Galactic, GTFO, you know, those games, but always on the lookout for more co-op games.
It's making it look like a roguelike, the way that he just dies every day and comes back and starts all over. We always said that, like, these crafting survival multiplayers, if there was something that you're working together towards, it would be great. Like, especially in Rust, like, it seemed like you would just build shit up and then you would fight other bands of humans. But if there was a casual, if there was a threat that was going up against everybody, like a giant monster or something, this seems like, yeah, you're all working together mm-hmm. against the wilderness, and it's procedurally generated. So, yeah, that sounds good to me.
Yeah, what looks interesting about it is the camera angle of it. I'm trying to get to some gameplay here, but every time I skip through the audio, it starts playing, or skip through the video, it starts playing audio. But it's like an over-the-shoulder, very far back. It almost looks like World of Warcraft, the way you're controlling your character. The camera yeah. is very far back with your person, like, way up front. So you see quite a bit of the map. It's not first person. It's not, and I think most crafting survival games are first person. So it's kind of weird to see one that's not first person, or more like an isometric, like Don't Starve or that kind of perspective.
It's a zoomed out third person. It's like if you're playing World of Warcraft and you a mouse wheel all the way back. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what this.
So
game
how much is it?
Let's take a look. This game comes out February 2nd, by the way, which is the day that this episode's going to air. It has no price yet, and it is in early access. Hmm. So,
do you have a guesstimate?
For something like this, I'd guess between 30. 20 and 30. Yeah.
I would say 30.
I'm going to go with 24.
$24.99.
Oh, don't get crazy, dude. Don't get crazy. Steve, you want to get in on this action, dude?
I think I will, man. Like Bobby said, we always the game nights always seem to go pretty good. So if a few other people grab it, I wouldn't mind picking it up.
How much do you think it's going to cost? You're betting early all access, your biscuits.
$29.99.
I said 30. You can't undercut. All right, fine. Let's go to the next one.
it's Price is Right. As long as you beat them by 1 cent.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Next game is Hermoder.
Hermoder. Yeah, so this is me and my Doom clones. This is a old school Doom clone where you can obviously see, you know, gun in the center, quick moving, dodging bullets and stuff. Even the ammo looks the same. But it has multiple play modes, different types of enemies, so you're not just fighting demons and stuff the whole time. From my understanding, it's supposed to be like a runic Viking kind of aspect in the beginning, and then it starts to get real crazy. Unlike original Doom, your view is not locked up and down, so you can actually look up and down and aim and stuff.
Ooh.
But it looks pretty good.
A 40-year-old technology. Yes.
Yes. It might only take 1 megabyte or however it was on your TI-83 calculator. But no. It unfortunately doesn't have a release date. It doesn't have a price, but I love this kind of shit, so I'm excited to see it come out.
There's better options out there, man. This looks rough. You see the guy playing fucking Doom on a pregnancy test? Did you guys see this? It's on Reddit.
No.
Well, that, I mean, that's like,
yeah, it's hilarious.
That's like, there are, people are always doing stuff like running Doom on this or that. And I've told this story before on the podcast, but I remember maybe 15 years ago, I was on a flight like Southwest. I was flying to New York, and they had Doom in the little screens on the headrest.
Oh yeah.
And it ran like shit, dude. I'm talking like 2-3 frames a second. It was terrible, but it ran.
Yeah. Jesus.
But yeah, dude, people are always like getting Doom to run on the weirdest things. This looks just like Doom or like Hexen. It's so funny how back in the day they always put the guns dead center in the screen. Such an awkward way to hold it.
That's where you put your gun stock, right? Right in your sternum. And you look with both eyes down the scope.
It's right under the rib cage. They had a gun in Team Fortress 2 for the soldier, the rocket launcher that kind of mimicked that.
Yeah.
And that's what I always play with.
It was called the Classic.
Yeah, the Classic. And it's weird, but I feel like I play better like that for some reason. I don't know, just because I played so many of these games when I was young. I actually kind of like the idea of let's take Doom and turn it into a roguelike. I don't think anyone's done that before.
They have.
That is a good idea.
Oh, Strafe? Yep, Strafe. I played Strafe.
Oh, Strafe, okay. Yeah.
But it's more of a, what came right after Doom? Quake? Yeah, probably like a Quake.
Yeah, Strafe is a little more updated. This looks like Hexen or Doom, Doom 1 and 2. This is really old school. Yeah, and I mean, they've had first-person shooters that are roguelikes for sure, but not any that look so close to the original Doom.
Every time I think that my memory is completely gone, there's like one brain cell that pops around and hits the right fucking thing, and I was like, Strafe!
Yeah.
All right. The Medium. This came out of nowhere. It was on Snipers. So we're doing a fantasy league for game reviews this year, and this was on Snipers' list. I hadn't even heard of it, but the reviews are pretty good. It ended up being like an 81. It's kind of like a horror survival game, I think. If you look at the gameplay, it's very reminiscent of like Resident Evil, where there's a camera angle kind of like it. Depending on what room you're in, the angle changes, and then you just play like that. It's almost like there's security cameras. I'm just saying about like the view. But you are a medium, so you can talk to the dead. And so, you know, if you touch an item that was important to somebody, then you jump into the other world. But this is one of those games where you can play two different realities at once. You're in the other world, the dead world, and you're in the live world at the same time. And so there's a lot of like cross play of solve a puzzle on one side and it helps you on the other. But the way that it's done, it does it like a split screen, and it almost looks like two different places, but it is one place. Apparently the storytelling is really great, and it's super creepy. If you just go to the link, the game, 14 minutes of gameplay, you'll see how creepy the characters and the ghosts or demons or whatever that she talks to is. Anyway, it's been done before, but this looks like a modern take on the whole dual reality system.
It's a lot of split screen.
You're playing at the same time.
I find it weird because, like, without the split screen like aspect, I thought, like, imagine if she's a medium, right? And like she's reading something, like, here's my shoe, tell me what happened to my daughter, and then she just starts walking around like the fortune telling room, and like she's in like the underworld and she's going up and down stairs. Meanwhile, this crazy lady is just in the middle of the room, just running against the wall.
Isn't that how it would be? Kind of, I guess. I don't know. So yeah, she's playing it out in the real world, but she's seeing this hellish landscape in her mind, but her body's playing out the other thing. So yeah, that does the split screen, and you're playing two at the same time. Yeah, go ahead.
Question.
Yeah, fuck it. What?
Yeah, from the gameplay that you saw, is it all just puzzle solving, walking simulator? Is there any other type of mechanic that's in it? Or
that's all I know. It doesn't look like a game that has a whole lot of action. It might have a little bit. It's maybe a run and hide cut type thing from what we're seeing here. But you know, I trust the reviews. It's mostly the story you're playing for. I don't know if I'm gonna play it. How much is this, Bobby?
I don't know. Do they have it on Steam?
They do. I believe they do.
All right. Let's see.
Oh, that's the link I should have got you, right? Sorry, buddy. We're going to wait in silence while you bring it up. $44.99. It must be on sale. 10% off.
Ooh. That's a hefty price for a non-AAA game.
They're boasting some pretty good reviews here.
Who's Bloober Team? Yeah, it's like 8 out of 10 game, 9 out of 10. Who are these people? Bloober.
Oh, the Blair Witch.
Oh. Did you play that one? You wanted to.
No, I never played it. Ray played it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I did not play that.
Layers of Fear 2. I haven't played that either.
Okay. So, yeah, those are both the run and hide type games.
Chat is saying it's free on Game Pass.
Oh, shit.
Oh, okay.
Game Pass coming through again. PC Gamer gave it 92. Shit. Game Reactor? Never heard of them. I give Game Reactor's name a 2 out of 10.
All right. Let's talk about some games that we have played this week.
Sounds good.
I'll start off with Gunfire Reborn. So I played a little bit of this with some people on Discord. Played it before. I always tell the story anytime I talk about this game. I played and played and played this game until I got the perfect run, and then I never played it again. It's a roguelike. It's a third-person over-the-shoulder shooter, co-op. I think you can have up to 4 players in a game. And it really favors luck, which is... I don't really like that part about it. Like, you just get bad runs. Or not even bad runs, but you just get runs where you don't get the right gear and you don't get the right... they call them like ascension perk points, like basically perk points that you can use to upgrade your character in certain ways. And you try to find a synergy between your perk points, your scrolls that you pick up, and also the weapons that you get. So you do more and more damage. And it's fun, but you just end up running the game 10 times, and like maybe one or two of those times you'll actually have everything kind of come together, and it's all chance. Of course, there is some skill involved too. You got to be good at first person shooters, but really, if you're not doing a whole lot of damage, you can't make it that far. Anyway, it's a good game. It's out of a Hong Kong studio, and it's still in development, early access. But the reason I bring it up is that we played it and I realized they had a new character. So they're up to 3 characters now, and their new character, who was just in the video here, is this bird looking guy. He's like an eagle and he's got a lot of melee attacks. He seems to be a real close range style character, which is very different from what I'm used to playing. I tried him out, did not work out very well. So I went back to another character. But it's still a solid game. You know, it's one that's worth having. It's on sale right now for $9.47, under $10. It's totally worth it for that price. Typically, it's $12. Totally worth it for that. Real solid game.
One thing I will say about this game is that, you know, I hate to compare this to, like, something that's so fleshed out, like The Binding of Isaac. But you said it, like, best, where it's, like, this is one of those games where you feel like in the first like 4 levels, if you don't get a mixture of like the perfect complementary like attachments and perk points and everything like that, you know you won't finish. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, why even continue or even try to continue if I know that I'm going to have trouble, you know?
Well, sometimes it comes together late. So a big question that a lot of new players have about this game is, should I upgrade my guns? Because you can stop by these, I think they're called Craftsmen, and they give an option to upgrade your gun. And the answer is no, you never want to upgrade your gun. I wish they would fix that so there would be a benefit to doing it. But basically, when you get to the later levels, you're looting guns. You're just picking up guns off of dead enemies that are like level 6 or level 5, and they have like a whole nother stat on top of everything else. So it really doesn't make sense to really invest a lot into whatever guns you get early game. Also, on top of that, like, it's really all about the occult scrolls and the talent points that you pick. So as you go through the levels, it gives you an option to pick between 3 talent points. You have, like, I don't know, 30? You got, like, 3 different trees. Each tree has, like, 5 levels. Each level has 3 options. So there's a ton of different talents that you can get. And each one of those has like 3 levels up to it. So basically you're just trying to get that to work really well. And like, say you go like a lightning build with a character, and then late game, you finally get that good lightning gun and then everything clicks. So it's possible for things to happen late game, but sometimes you just don't get good perk points, ascension perk points, and it just doesn't happen. And it's kind of frustrating because it's like, no matter how well you play, it's just not going to happen.
That is true. Especially that first boss. I remember that was one of my biggest problems with this game, is the first boss is kind of just like a DPS check. And sometimes, you know, you just didn't get the items and the combinations of stuff to kill that guy. I mean,
he's kind of a DPS check, but he's got 100%.
He is, dude. You have to get through that shield in a certain amount of time before he... So you can damage him, and then he heals.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't get through that shield before he gets his shield back, you should be able to.
There's no reason why you can't get through that shield, though. I don't think he even starts with a shield. Like you just start doing straight damage to him. Then he goes and he stands on top of the other area, right. And then he starts charging his shield there. But it's pretty easy to burst through. I mean, that's really not the reason that people lose to that boss. They just don't understand the attack patterns that he has. He's got very specific things that he does. It's like a World of Warcraft raid
boss.
Yeah, it's like when he does this, okay, watch out for the... Basically, don't stand in the red circles is what it always comes down to, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's a good game for $12. I mean, man, why not?
Yeah, cool art style. It's just one of those games. But what were you saying about like roguelike? You know, you had a great fucking run and didn't want to play again.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because Chad just reinstalled Hades, and he had been playing, and he's like, "Dude, I'm on my 49th run and I haven't beat Hades. Like, what the fuck?" And I'm like, "I don't know what to tell you, man. Like, you know, it'll happen. Just keep playing." And so the next run, right after that, he got this like incredible run where he said that, you know, you get three extra lives kind of at a certain point. And he killed Hades without even using one of those extra lives. It was just easy. And it was just, you know, that's how great of a run he had of the RNG was in his favor on that run. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that he's good enough to beat Hades, really. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it just happened to happen. So I wonder if he's in that same boat that you are, where like, I'm not going to touch this game again because that was amazing. I'm going to retire champion, you know? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I had beat the game, which is actually pretty hard to do. But when you play through this game, you earn a currency that you then get to spend at the end of your playthrough. Yeah. And you buy upgrades for your character.
Permanent ones.
Yeah, permanent upgrades that persist no matter what character you're playing, some that are specific to the characters. So you're making progress either way. Even if you only get through the first few levels, it's like you've got something to show for it. I don't know if Hades is like that. I haven't played Hades.
Yeah.
Hades does have similar mechanics, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a good thing.
In that game, do the enemies scale with the amount of gear that you've picked up or those enhancements that you've gotten?
No.
I feel like it's probably static, right?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same. So, I mean, if your gear isn't coming together, you're going to notice it. And it's got kind of the same problem that Borderlands does. It's really hard to tell. When you're about to pick up a weapon, it'll show you the stats and like what's better than this or that. But it's so detailed that it's really hard to determine if it's actually going to be more effective or not, because there's so many variables. Like, it's like, okay, well, how much damage am I doing with like poison, and how much, all right, this has got a faster rate of fire, but this one does more per shot. And like, I don't know, there's so many different things that basically it's just easier to pick up the gun, try it out. And if it seems like it's doing more damage, stick with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what they did add? The first time I talked about this game months ago, I said they really need some sort of damage meter so you can just tell how effective you are, you know? And they do have that in this game now. You can bring up a screen that shows you and all your teammates, what items you have and who's doing how much damage. Oh, just total flat out damage.
At any point or at the end of the level?
No, just like all together.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's almost like a race. You can see how much damage you're doing more than other people, but it really gives you a good idea as to like how effective you are with the weapon that you have.
I unlocked the second character, which was the bulldog. He seemed to be terrible. There's a third character. Have you played him or have they been balanced?
Yeah, we were talking about that when you were gone. He's more of a melee character. The dog is good. The problem is people spend so long unlocking him that they've upgraded a lot of stuff with the cat. And they're so familiar with all the cat's ascension abilities and ascension talent points that it's really hard to switch over to the dog, where he just operates a completely different way. Like you're basically starting as a beginner again.
Right.
And he has an ability where he can fire with two weapons at one time, which is actually really good because one weapon can be like 10, 20% chance to apply shock, and the other weapon can be like does bonus damage to shocked enemies.
Right.
So you can really get some synergy going there. But again, that creates yet another thing that has to click together at some point. Like you got to get the right things together, and it's just tough. I wish maybe even the levels were longer so you had more opportunity, because you never even feel like you finish your build, really. You never feel like you finish your talent tree or that you got enough of those. So I kind of feel like they need a whole nother level in this game. Anyway, still a good game though. Gunfire Reborn, check it out.
Especially for $12, and the multiplayer works. Mm-hmm. I never had too many problems with the multiplayer.
Yeah, although they do the annoying thing where they automatically turn your microphone on as soon as you join the lobby.
Mm-hmm. Oh god!
And nobody realized it, so you just got some dude just like talking. Yeah. Just talking to somebody. Yeah. All right, what have you guys been playing?
So I've been playing The Last of Two exclusively this week, not because it's just because my life and the way it's set up. Basically, it's in my bedroom, and so it just works out. Baby falls asleep, I can play fucking Last of Us 2. I was talking about this last week. Let me get into the game itself and maybe why it got so many awards. First of all, I think one of the greatest things about the game is the realism. The way that people talk to each other is very, it just sounds right for the situation. You know, there's nothing, it's just people talking back and forth to each other in a certain situation. The weapons, the way they work, the jumping, the hiding, all of it just seems pretty legit. The only thing that seems like non-realistic is you take a gunshot or two or three, and then you heal it up with a bandage on your forearm, right?
That's pretty much every video game.
Yeah, it's pretty much every video game. But if I were to turn up the difficulty, there's like six difficulty levels on this. I'm sure one gunshot would just do me in. And so that's just, that's basically me setting it to that, you know, unrealistic portion. I could set it all the way to the realistic portion. And so there's that, you know, you just really get into these conversations going back and forth about just like bullshitting a lot of the times. A lot of times they're not talking about the story. They're not talking about, it's just, you know, there's these, the main character, Ellie, is lesbian, and she has her would-be girlfriend as her backup. Mm-hmm. And they're just talking, you know, just talking, regular people. And it really draws you in a lot more than a lot of other games would.
Yeah, where they just dump exposition. Yeah. It's like what most games do. It's like, you got a rendezvous with Alpha Squad at 0800 hours.
There's almost none of that.
Nah.
So the other thing that I really enjoy about this game, I mean, when I talk about realism, obviously, there's zombies that are mushroom-based in this game, and that's crazy. I'll give you that. Now that I've given you that, because I know that's your setting, it's up to you to fuck it up. You know what I mean? By doing bullshit things. Oh, I'm going to make a sound gun or whatever the fuck, you know? Everything else is pretty realistic. And so that helps you emotionally bond with the game, because you're like, never are you taken out of it. Are you be like, what? That would never fucking happen. Basically, everything besides the zombies, everything would be exactly how it is. And so that part draws you in. Besides that, the controls, you know, this third person perspective, it always has its issues. This like adventure game control system. Mm-hmm. If you Grand Theft Auto's been at it for five iterations, and it's still clunky as fuck, and people make fun of it. This is one of the better, if not the best, like third-person control schemes, because like they knew that people were only going to play this on PlayStation controllers. It's dialed into the fucking nano, whatever you want to call it. Like, it just works perfectly. Anything you want to do, it just happens. It's almost like I haven't been playing PlayStation for, I don't know how many years, 15 years I haven't played PlayStation. And almost everything feels intuitive and just kind of happens. I mean, to the point where you want to walk, kind of mid walk, run, sprint. It all just feels naturally by how much I'm pushing on the thing. I know these are things that are common, but this game, it's just the controls are dialed in to the nth degree. Yeah, and I guess more on this next week because I'm going to keep playing this. Nick, have you played this? You're waiting for the PS5 remake, right?
Yeah, so they said that they were going to be upscaling it to the PS5. I don't think they're actually going to do a full remake. I got about 5 hours into it. I got past like the first main story objective besides like the prologue. I obviously don't want to spoil too much, but after you know, one of the main storytelling aspects happens, you go to a key location, and I'm leaving that key location now. So I'm pretty deep in there. But like I said, I'm going to wait until the PS5 upscaling, all that kind of stuff happens. I'm going to transfer my save and then just play all the way through.
I'm on my way to the television station. You made it past me, huh?
So I'm about an hour after you. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Steve, do you have groupies? Cause I'm seeing a lot of people that, on the stream that I haven't seen before.
Hey, I told people to show up, man.
That's cool, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
It's funny. Cause
I was going to say,
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
There you go.
No.
I was going to say, I played Last of Us 2 as well on PS4 Pro when it first came out.
And yeah.
It's one of those defining games of a generation that really just pushes the medium so much further. Like when it's one of those things where if someone asked me like, oh, what's a game you'd recommend to show somebody who just doesn't understand why gaming is so big, that's one of those things that you might put the YouTube movie version up and let them like watch that. You know, it's that good.
Sam, my girlfriend gets, every time she walks by, she sits down and just starts watching. Like, it just sucks you in. It's just really well made. It's just really well made. It's, yeah, it is the nth degree of what you can do on probably console. And if you had millions and millions of dollars, this is what happens.
Yeah. You said something interesting. You were talking about the controller and like how it's just honed in. I think that's like one of the big benefits that the consoles have when they do exclusives is that they can really tailor it to just their hardware and they pull like every single ounce that they can because they don't have to optimize for all these different configurations of PC hardware, you know?
Absolutely. Which is why like it's The Witcher 3 even gets even more accolades for me because it works on everything. You can really play it on Switch now. Yeah. Obviously, it's been out for 5 years and it didn't work. It didn't even work really well when it came out, but they've been working and working and working on it, and now it's like a fine-tuned sword. But it's a credit to them that they were able to do that. But yeah, there's a huge advantage, man. You only have to build it for one machine.
Any plans for Last of Us Part 3? Have they even talked about that?
I don't know.
I think they might do what they did last time with The Last of Us, where they kind of made a DLC that was about 4 to 5 hours long and then discuss making another one. Mm. If you don't know anything about The Last of Us 1, they made a DLC where it's the time period where Joel is in a coma. And so you're like, well, what happened for 7 months? And it's Ellie telling Joel and trying to make him recover. And you're constantly playing in a flashback and in current time. And so like in current time, you're trying to find antibiotics for Joel and you're trying to find medication. And so you have all this fighting and stuff where you're fighting humans in the present time. And in the past, it's the discovery of Ellie's like coming of age story where she discovers she's immune to the disease, and B, you know, she kind of discovers who she really is, her sexuality and everything like that. And unfortunately she sees the first person that she ever falls in love with get eaten by zombies. Mm. And that is the Sony or Naughty Dog announced about 3 months after that they were working on a new project in the Last of Us 2, in the Last of Us universe, which ended up being The Last of Us 2.
Mm. Gotcha.
Last of Us 2 also has a multiplayer patch that's still supposed to a multiplayer mode that's supposed to be like a standalone thing, and without giving the story away, it does have the ability to continue on.
Oh, that's cool.
Hmm. Yeah.
This is the last thing I forgot to talk about is the tension in the action sequences. When you're going up against zombies, either one really. It's the whole go quiet, go loud thing, right? And it's almost always go quiet until you have to go loud. And the mix of tension, dude, like I, at the end of these sequences, I have to like let it all out because it puckers your asshole, man. Maybe it's because I care so much about these characters now, or this character. Something about the way that it all works out, the realism, the way these people are looking around for you, it all just, the AI is just acting like people would. And once you got me with the realism, then I'm hook, line, and sinker. You got me. And then you put me in a shitty situation. I'm going to feel fucking shitty until I get out of it. And so that's probably one of the reasons that it stomped the Game Awards.
I think one thing that has to do with like the, you know, you were talking about the stealth and loud, is that in this game, there's no real clear stealth loud like mode. Like, you know, you play Metal Gear Solid and it's like, oh, you know, stealth, you know, get discovered and you hear the alarm and then you see a countdown and everything. That doesn't really apply to this game. It's like, oh, you're going loud, you shoot somebody and then you run into like a closet and then, you know, they all kind of chill. They're still looking for you, but there's kind of like this medium that keeps existing. But eventually, you know, like you said, they react like real humans would in the kind of situation. Like, they're still looking for you, but they're not like literally sprinting everywhere trying to find you. Mm-hmm. But that I think that's one key thing about this game where it's like there's no clear mode between like loud and quiet. It just happens, you know? It feels organic.
It just happens, yes. That's a good way.
Did you guys also have like that tension from the resource management?
Yes.
I did want to talk about this. So a lot of games have you searching around for shit and it just doesn't make sense. So you're like, oh, here's that leaf or here's that, whatever it is. You're just looking around. And in this game, it seems more important because you know when you pick up bolts, it's almost like your XP for your guns is going up. Every time you pick up everything else, the pills, you know that your XP for your abilities is going up. So you're searching. It makes the searching more. It's kind of it's realistic, but also, I don't know. I hate searching for shit in regular games. Hmm. And in this game, it just. I don't know. I love searching through drawers, and it's not like over the top. Like if you play Fallout, you come up to a desk. It's got six drawers. You got to look through six drawers, and most of the time you're gonna get fucking, I don't know, a tin cup, and that tin cup is worth 0.01 cents. And you're like, why was I in here? In this game, there's one drawer for a whole thing. And then it's almost like a slot machine. You're like, am I getting, everything's important. Everything. There's no resource where I'm like, I've got too many of those. No, I've never had a full clip once. I don't think the entire game. I've never had to reload because I don't have a spare clip. Every single bullet is precious.
So I think that's something that me and you completely differ. Like I play on the hardest difficulty. And I'm constantly trying to find melee weapons and bricks and bottles just to conserve ammo. So I have ammo for like those oh shit situations mm-hmm. where like 10 dudes show up. And I've seen so many people talk about this and like describe the exact situation. I mean, you were talking about like one guy's like, yeah, man, I'm always out of bullets or I barely have enough bullets to, you know, to win the situation or whatever. And then, you know, it's just hard. And then like the other person's like, well, I just bash people's brains in with a pipe or like a piece of wood and I just pick up all the bullets. Yeah. And that just keeps repeating. And so try to switch it around. Try to just stay melee only.
No, I did that recently. I went down the crafting tree, and now I can upgrade my melee abilities. And you run up on the right person at the right time, and it's one shot. It's one hit shit. You just fucking kill him with a killing blow. And so I got some attacks out of crafting, which you usually don't get. But yeah, now that I can upgrade melee abilities, I'm running around. It's funny because sometimes you get lit up when you're trying to fucking run somebody with a gun. But yeah, it's way more fun for me. So there was one time where I just ran up and I basically took this dude's head off. And my bitch was like, Jesus Christ, Ellie. Like, oh my God. And I was like, yeah, well, sometimes it happens. So it's just like a natural reaction to this craziness, you know? Anyway, yeah, it's a good game. Nick, let's just jump over to you.
So this is going to be a quick one for me. Rust is getting a new update this week. It's got drones now. Essentially, there's a force wipe every first Thursday of the month. And what ends up happening is, you know, they wipe all the servers so things don't become stagnant and people keep playing the game. No matter if your server is private or not, you essentially have to actually pay to make sure your server is not wiped if you own one. But they're introducing drones. At this moment in time, they only have one functionality, and that's essentially Amazon drone. So in the game now, there are communities that are NPC communities. Like, there's like the good guys and bandits, and you can buy like guns and building materials from the good guys and bandits. And now these only serve as an ordering center. The one kind of like multiplayer aspect to them is that these ordering centers are random in the environment. And so it could be between like 10 people and people are trying to order stuff and people are fighting around it. But they come up with a caveat. Like, if you order something, the order center only keeps your order for 5 minutes. And if you don't pick it up within 5 minutes, anybody can pick it up.
Why do you have to pick it up if there's a drone that delivers it?
No, that's the thing. So like so you can't have your delivery zone in your house. It's in a public area. So when you play Rust now, there's a variance in map size, but like the store might be like a 10-minute horseback ride from your house. But the little delivery drone area might be like a minute, right? So you ride to the delivery drone area, you pay whatever you need to pay for your stuff and the delivery, and it'll be there within 30 seconds. And yeah, so you don't have to do that horse ride back and risk all your stuff just to get your delivery.
Okay.
So is it like a Warzone loadout drop where everyone can see it on the map immediately, or?
No. So what happens is that the if you're looking at the video, like you see like this weird console that they're showing and it has like three buttons on it, right? What will happen is anybody can go there and order something, and it's not weapons. Well, I mean, it is weapons sometimes, but it'll have like a shopping list, and it's like, oh, I want some tarp and I want some cement walls and I want an M4, and then you have to pay with scrap because scrap is the currency, right? And the drone will deliver it there. No one can see it on the map. However, you can see the drone flying through the air. Essentially, this is just another way to cause people to have multiplayer like interactions and to fight.
So somebody could kill you while you're waiting and then take your shit.
Exactly. Right.
Or somebody could maybe see the drone flying and see that it's going somewhere and follow it and then kill you.
Yeah. And so like people are already talking about it on the test server. Like, I baited some people by ordering a drone to deliver me like 10 stones, and like five people were chasing after the drone. And when it got there, I killed them all and took their shit.
Oh, like, countering.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's big brain stuff, but they've said that these drones will eventually become usable by the public, where you can actually like pilot them and stuff. And they've said that there's going to be more of an aspect to the game. Like, this is the first iteration of the drones coming to the game.
Interesting.
Oh, Kurd, you asked how long this game's been around? 4+ years. Actually, no, 5+ years. Yeah,
it's been a long time. It's changed a lot since the first time I played it.
Yeah. I mean, graphically, it's come a long way. And it looks
Amelia, you said, you know, you were talking about this earlier in, like, these survival builder games, like, you know, Minecraft and shit. Like, when we were talking about that Viking game that Bobby was promoting, or not promoting, but talking about during Discover Weekly, and you're like, oh, there has to be, like, an end boss or something that everybody needs to team up against, or, like, your friends can team up against.
Yeah.
And they introduced that into Rust, like, last year.
What was
it? And so, essentially, there's four of them. So, there is a helicopter that shows up randomly, which is kind of like the great equalizer. It flies around and just shoots people that are not naked. So if you have like a gun on your back, it'll start shooting at you. But if you're butt ass naked, it won't shoot at you.
It's funny because I usually shoot all over people that are naked. Hey, oh,
there we go.
Hey.
Dad joke of the week.
Yikes.
That's one of them. There's another one called the Bradley, which is a an APC that has guards, and it has a cannon on top and machine guns. And it's like designed to it patrols this area called the missile launch site, and you're supposed to destroy it, and it grants you like a key to get into the launch site and get stuff. The third one is a military base, which has like I think it's like 60 NPCs. And the NPCs in this game are insane. Like, they don't miss with, like, a pistol from, like, 200 yards.
Are they robots or humans?
The NPCs are humans. They're scientists.
Okay. Everybody and knows that scientists are also fucking assassins. What the fuck?
Like, yeah.
Maybe they got, like, DNA enhancements. Let's go with that.
Yeah. And so the last thing is, like, these oil rigs, which is kind of, like, the same aspect as, like, the military base, but it's an oil rig. And it's more like the multiplayer kind of NPC, like a dungeon.
Like a world boss?
Kind of. It's like some people will literally like wait in the water or like underwater for like hours at a time with like scuba gear on and wait for like someone to attack the oil rig and just wait till they wipe everybody out on the oil rig and then kill them and then just take all the shit that they cleared. And jerks. It's gotten way bigger since you guys played.
Yeah, I'm sure. It looks like it. It's almost you can't even. Yeah, it looks completely different, dude.
So, yeah, when we played back in the day and we ran into those hackers and we built that structure in between the mountains, they did a complete overhaul about 2 years after that where they revamped the graphics, revamped the assets, revamped a bunch of other stuff. They kept the same concept. They removed the zombies and instead put in scientists and put in like hostile animals and stuff, and people love it.
Gotcha. Way scarier. Scientists.
Wonder about how much is it now?
Has it always been $20? Oh, it doubled in price. I remember it was 20 when we bought it, right?
Yeah, it was 20 originally. It was on sale last week for $23, but right now it's the current price.
Gotcha. And private servers, do those also get wiped frequently, or can you keep those up if it's your own server?
So someone's asking right now, Kurd's asking, how many concurrent players? Up to 200 at once. And so I own a private server, and it's been pretty interesting. Essentially, to have a private server that doesn't get wiped, you have to delist it from the public server IP address, addresses, and then remove the API that includes your server into the Rust like public domain. And what ends up happening is like you don't get Steam updates and you don't get a bunch of other supporting updates, so you have to update everything manually when there is one. Because normally if you buy like a Rust server, what will happen is like, oh, you know, Tuesday's an update, we'll automatically update your server, nothing will crash, whatever. But if you want like a truly private server where nothing is removed forcibly every first Tuesday, I mean every first Thursday, then it will automatically wipe every first Thursday. Yeah, so that's one thing I was thinking about doing with the DLG community is like whoever owns Rust, there's a strategy called Zerging, and it's where everybody usually is butt naked and just makes wooden spears and then just chases people.
Okay.
And it's pretty nuts.
When you said Zergen, that is not at all what I was imagining.
Yeah, it's like there's videos online of like literally like 50 people chasing people on the beach, and it's insane.
Could be fun. I feel like everybody's got this game too. Like everybody bought it 4 or 5 years ago whenever it came out in early access, and a lot of people had stopped playing it, but everyone still has it.
One thing about the game is like it still feels clunky, right? There isn't like any game breaking bugs or like instantly die when you fall off like a 2 foot drop on like a rock or something. But there is a little clunk to it.
Yeah, I remember the combat just being very wonky, especially when you tried to do melee combat.
That is gone. I will say that. Like, that has been fixed. What is kind of cool what they added now that is still a little jank is cars, but it's not like, hey, there's a sedan or there's like a truck, right? The cars are modular, and the way it works is there's like they call it a 2-mod chassis or a 3-mod chassis or a 4-mod chassis where you can put, for example, like a truck bed or a liquid container in where you can store liquids. And you can build an armored car. And like the coolest part is that you can like wiggle the windows, like the armored windows up and down, and you can shoot out of them. But it's got a lot of detail in some places, and then some other detail, like in other places, it has none at all. So I like it. Like obviously if I rent my own server and, you know, pay for it for my friends, I obviously like it. So
yeah. Cool. All right. Steve, what do you got to talk about?
I can start with Everspace. So Everspace 2, I've been playing that for, I want to say, a couple weeks now. I think I'm about 10 to 12 hours into it. Not sure if any of you guys played the original Everspace, but that one was a roguelite space game. You guys actually talked about it on an episode, so yeah, you did play it.
But yeah, Emilio played that one ago. Quite a bit.
Yeah, so in that one, you had your character was a clone. That was how they justified the Everlight mechanics or the roguelite mechanics. And this one, it is more of a traditional action-adventure game. It's actually more of a streamlined RPG, except for your character or the mechanics, the RPG mechanics are being applied to the ship. So instead of raising the XP of a character, you're raising the XP of the ship. You're adding on new components. It's got these real cool rock, paper, scissors mechanics when it comes to like going against other enemies, you know, based off the shield type, you have to determine what type of weapons you're using. And for the being early access, from what I've read, the campaign is about 15 hours now. They're going to keep adding more content to it. But even right now in the early access, the HOTAS support works very well. It's got VR planned at some point. What I was really impressed about is that it's a game that went from having literally pretty much no narrative at all in the first one to this one has a, it's got a narrative, and I think it might be kind of a consequence of COVID, but there's no like CGI mechanics. Everything's done like via comic book panels, but the way that it's done is really nice. Like every mission you play kind of plays out like episode of a comic book or like a chapter of a comic book, I should say, where you've got like this self-contained mission and then it all plays into the overarching narrative. So really cool game. It's $40 in early access, but depending on how many hours you're going to get overall, like I said, I've got like 12 in it right now, and they're still adding more content. I think by the time that everything's said and done, it'd be worth the price tag.
How much did you play the first one, Steve?
Ooh, I would have to go look on my Steam. I could actually find that. I want to say like 20 to 30 hours. I put a lot of time into the first one.
Yeah, me too. At a certain point, they did put in a story. I don't know how deep the story went because that's about, I was already burnt out when they added the story. But same. I put in probably like 40, 50 hours at least. I really enjoyed the roguelike mechanics of the first one. I praised the first one so much, man, just because it was the first roguelike that had beautiful graphics. Like, it's just not done, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and the space game, like, niche is so small now, too. I mean, you've got a couple that come out recently, like Star Wars Squadrons, but there's really just not a lot. There's, like, the four big ones everyone knows about, Star Citizen, Eve, No Man's Sky, and Elite Dangerous, but having stuff like this just kind of, it takes me back to the old school games, you know, like Star Fox 64. I was real big on that as a kid. Freelancer, like I've always just loved these type of games, so I'm glad that these indie developers who are kind of keeping the genre alive best as they can. And man, like, you guys are seeing the footage here, like the actual visuals are improved so much over the first one, and the sound design is incredible too. Like, they've got this real cool synth pop rock type of soundtrack that really just goes with the gameplay, keeps it real hectic.
Very cool.
Yeah, beautiful graphics.
Yeah, God, this one, it's like you're in a city here.
Yeah, what is that all about, Steve?
Yeah, so you, they really open it up a lot. So you know, you play your first mission as a tutorial, you come out of that, and then they basically open up the, you know, it's not a one-to-one of our galaxy, it's like a fictional galaxy, but then they open that up and you've got these wormholes, and again, it's an RPG, so you've kind of got these narrative things that you know you have to do, the major quests, and then the way they do NPCs is like, you know, in a Witcher or something like that, you're going to have the guys at the brewery or, you know, at the farm and all that. But in this, it's like, oh, every space station you go to, obviously there's going to be different people there. So they're giving you quests and, you know, you're building your allegiance with this group that might not know you because you're from a completely different sector of space. So it just really is it's hard to see it as an RPG because so much of the gameplay is like action adventure oriented, but it really does have a deep RPG system kind of in the background of it. No narrative decisions you're making, but just that whole familiarity with doing quests for NPCs, upgrading equipment, all of that is still in there.
So question, Elite Dangerous is something that like you could do forever. Like there's so much there. Right. And then
absolutely.
I guess Everspace has more of a finite ending, or it has like a campaign that you're playing through. Which one of those two would you prefer? Something that's like never ending, like a life in space, or like a really well told story that, you know, lasts 40, 50 hours.
Man, I'm the worst person to ask that to, because
You're taking both?
I take them both. I mean, I see tight knit narrative, like, you know, Last of Us, like those type of experiences you can't make yourself. But then I also like those games with, you know, what they call emergent gameplay, where they just give you this sandbox and you go and you make the gameplay, you know, like the stories you hear about Eve, the stories you hear out of Elite Dangerous, where players really drive. Like, the developers, they put all the mechanics in there, but then it's up to the players to really make, like, these monumental events happen, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I like both, though, but...
You're riding the fence, man. You didn't give me an answer, but that's okay.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, if I had to be stuck on a desert, I'd be one that would keep going forever, because then you've got something, you know, it won't get old.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't want to give up. Like, it was like, you can't have one or the other. I wouldn't want to give up those narrative experiences either.
For sure.
This type of game seems difficult to play with a keyboard and mouse. I don't know. Maybe that's just, I've never tried to play one with it. It does have full controller support.
So it's interesting you brought that up. Again, like with the character, the way that the flying style is on here is more like FPS, because you can use,
yeah,
like you're not doing throttle and such, is WASD, you know, really the controls, you're strafing a lot. So really it is a game that goes well to keyboard and mouse.
Yeah, it's super intuitive. Did you play the first one, Bobby?
No.
Play it off my account, dude.
I think, like, I have it.
Yeah.
Just never played it. I'm surprised they made the jump from roguelike to RPG.
Yeah.
In this.
Yeah.
Just totally switched it up.
I don't know why. I thought it was well received the way it was the first one. Like, I didn't really hear a lot of complaints then. This one, I could see myself like probably 30 hours into it after everything's all said and done, probably not coming back to it, whereas the roguelike mechanics keep you coming back. So I'm really not sure why they made that decision.
Yeah, I played the beta and I was like, what the fuck? They took out the best part out of it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nick, what the goddamn hell is your alcohol of the week? What is going on here?
Oh, yeah. No, this is just literally like 10 seconds. There is... new whiskey. Sorry, I'm obviously drinking too much of it. It's called Basil Hayden's dark rye whiskey. Try it; it's good. You'll hear my opinion on the next alcohol next week.
Okay, I think I've had this. That looks very. Oh no, I definitely have not had that. Okay, cool. Yeah. Send me one, and then we'll talk about it.
Okay.
All right. I guess I'll talk about my only other game that I played this week. Well, the only new game that I played this week, Bomber Crew. A couple months ago, I was on that podcast with the Horrible Gamers, and one of the guys on there was talking about Space Crew, which is kind of the sequel to this, not direct sequel, but it's basically Bomber's Crew, but in space. He was kind of disappointed, as were a lot of people, with the game. If you had played Bomber Crew and moved to Space Crew, I think you found it a little bit lacking. And Bomber Crew has always been a game that I had an eye on and have been meaning to pick up, but you know, I didn't want to spend $15 on it. Turns out it was free on Humble Bundle maybe a week or two ago, so I grabbed it during that and thought, perfect, this is a great opportunity to check out this game that I've always had my eye on. And it really is awesome. So a lot of people throw out the comparison of FTL right away, and it is kind of like that. But not really. You are a bombing crew, about six different guys that are flying a plane during World War II, and you're being sent out on different missions, and it's a strategy game that happens in real time. You have to send your gunner to the gunner cockpit, or move him to a different one, or send him to go reload and get more ammunition, then come back. You have to tell your pilot to bring up the landing gear or go to a higher altitude. You got to navigate with your map guy. You've got to...
Can you pause?
You can't pause, but you can hold control and it does the slow motion bullet time, but that's on a meter, so you only have so much of that.
Okay.
And then you let it recharge.
Time is a resource.
Yeah, exactly. And it really gets pretty hectic very quickly because you've got like three gunners, one bomber, pilot, map guy, engineer, and I don't know, maybe another guy. I can't remember.
Excuse me, sir. Map guy's called the navigator.
Navigator, sure.
That's what you call me. I'm over here. I'm the navigator of this podcast. They call me a map guy again.
Map guy. Yeah, and then when you bomb, like you have to like target and look through the little reticule and like drop the bombs. Like there's actually some things that you have to do. Like the gunners, you just target the guys and then the gunners handle the rest. But the bomb, you actually have to kind of aim that and make a few skill shots. But it's a great game. It looks like it's a mobile game. I was not expecting like the level of complexity and the challenge that I was experiencing with this. I went on like they run you through the tutorial and it's like, oh, okay, cool. They show you how everything works. And I'm like, all right, I got this. First mission, I go out there and my plane just gets shredded just because I'm like getting confused. I'm like, wait, what? How do I get back to my pilot? Okay, now he's got to do this. And then that happens. And you can't just like, it's not like some of these other games where it's just like, you just repair, you know, you like whack something with a wrench and it just starts repairing. No, when your plane gets full of holes, it's full of holes. You can like send a guy out on a wing to repair an engine, but, the body of the plane kind of gets perforated a little bit. It's an awesome game, man. Like,
dude,
I totally
remember. This is cool, man.
It's good.
I'm glad you played this.
It's only single player, though. This seems like it would be great multiplayer, but that would totally make it easier. Like, right. To split up the responsibilities and have two people doing all this stuff. Like, it would definitely make it easier. So I think the idea was to have this as a single player game.
Yeah.
But I would love to see something like this in a multiplayer form. I don't think they did that with Space Crew, which, again, is same thing, but in outer space.
Which was first? So, sorry.
Bomber Crew was first. Okay. This game's from 2017. It's a little old.
Okay.
I think since Leslie was in the Air Force, I'm going to make her play this.
It's great, man. You get to name your team too, which I never really do, but it's like old timey World War II. You know, when you're sitting in like the bay and like leveling up your crew. Oh yeah, you level up your crew and they get new abilities and stuff, so things become even more complicated. But it plays like that old like jingle jangle music, like burr, 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 like on an old radio and stuff, and it just feels very old timey. So
cool. I feel like I saw the name of the plane written on the side of the plane.
Yeah.
Was that custom?
Yeah, you can.
It looked custom.
You can write whatever you want on the side of the plane. You can also.
Bombs?
No, not on the bombs, but you can choose the color. There's a bunch of cosmetic stuff. You can choose like little artwork. Like I've got the little teeth. You know how they put the teeth?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was like, ah, that looks cool. My plane, the Lil Spittoon, is...
The Lil Spittoon.
Yeah, it's got the name on the side. But you can also add like your own custom artwork that you can import into the game and put that as like decals on your plane. I'm like, wow, that could get really interesting.
Yeah. Why does your plane look like a giant dick, dude? Like a really small dick. Hey-o.
Wow. I'm just taking a look at Space Crew real quick here. So this one's $20. It's been on sale plenty of times. The reviews are not bad. I mean, I I've got a lot more game to go through on Bomber Crew, but I really like it, man. Like, I would not be opposed to picking up Space Crew at some point down the line.
Bobby, what's the mission layout in this game? Is it procedural missions, or are they, is it a set number of missions? What's that like?
Yeah, so they start you off with like a grouping of missions. You choose which one you want to do. They're all like low risk or whatever. And then you get access to the harder ones. And then there's like a critical mission that you need to pass to in order to move on. And a lot of the missions are bombing runs because you're a bombing crew. So in addition to fighting off all the planes that are attacking you, you've got to get your guy into the bombing area, target the bombs, load them up, open the doors. Can't tell you how many times I forgot to do that. Tried to drop my bombs without opening the doors first.
Does that blow you up?
No, it just won't launch them. Unfortunately, it'd be funny if it just blew up.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're basically doing bombing runs on submarines, on bases.
America, dude. Dude, I'm loving this. The more scenes I see this, I'm enjoying this.
Yeah, it's pretty good. But these are like the early missions. I don't know if they change as it goes on, but I assume they're all kind of just bombing runs.
And this is one of those like flying fortresses is what they call them, right? They just kind of like fly in. You have a gunner on the top. The average lifespan of a bottom gunner on one of the flying fortresses was 60 minutes. So they just had other dudes ready to jump in there when they died.
Yeah, it was insane. It was one of the worst spots ever to be in because everyone's shooting at you, obviously. But B, you had the chance of being shot at vertically and from the bottom. And like as a vertical gunner, when fighters usually attacked bombers in World War II, they would attack from the top down. And then their re-attack would be from the bottom up. And it was hard for fighters to maintain an altitude above the bombers because bombers are made to fly at a higher altitude. And so the bottom gunners were just always in the target pattern, essentially.
Fucked up, dude. Terrible. Yeah, imagine pulling your homie out so you could sit in the same hole that he just died in and doing it. Oof. Way to really bring it down, Emilio. All right.
History.
I don't know if Bomber Crew is still free on Humble Bundle. Might want to look into that, though. Highly recommend it.
Almost worth money, Bobby.
It is. I mean, it's $15 on Steam. It's worth $15. Like, this is a game I want to play through. You might hear more about it again next week. We'll see. All right. What else you guys got?
I'll give an update on Battlefield Gothic Armada. I finally found some people to play with when I got to play earlier on Tuesday. Never being able to play some of the other races' ships because they're not involved in the story mode. So like Tau and some of the other races that are just not available in the story mode. Amazing, amazing variants in play style and things like that. Like just like they play on the tabletop, the Tau have a rhetoric of not getting close. And so like, for example, you can blast ships from super far away, but they're god awful up close and they're god awful at invading other people's ships. Still a shout out if anyone in the community wants to play or wants to pick up this game and needs some help, let me know. That's my update on that.
Nick, real quick, so I'm on the fifth or sixth book, dude, and I really like so the fourth one I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna continue this, and the fifth book I was like, whoa, this is cool. Because the fifth book, it goes through the life of like a dude that lives on a planet. They don't even know about outer space. And then out of nowhere, the Imperials land and change their entire life. And it really brought it home to like kind of like a semi-regular dude that gets sucked into the Imperium, right? Kind of like what you were talking about. If you're the strongest dude on your planet, you might get sucked into the Imperium. So that's kind of what happens to this dude. But the majority of this book is like 60% of it was just his regular life. And then all of a sudden, it's almost like a fantasy book, like dragons and shit. And then all of a sudden, fucking angels descend from the heavens. And now you know what the real truth is and whatever. So I'm really enjoying that one. But I do have a question for you. The Space Marines have X amount of factions, like a good amount of factions, right? There's so many. You can make your armies out of all these different things. Do the Chaos Marines also have the equal amount of factions, or are they just a faction of the Space Marines?
So essentially the Chaos Space Marines do have their own factions. There are Chaos Space Marines that only worship one Chaos God, for example. The Thousand Sons only worship Tzeentch. But the thing is, they will work with like Slaaneshi Chaos Marines, because you learn about the traitor factions later, you learn that those factions were once normal Space Marines that have traded. And so there's like the Death Watts, the like Plague Marines and all these other kind of things that exist. So there is a variance, unfortunately.
Not as much as the regular
Marines. Not as much. Right. But the way that they subsidize that to kind of give the Chaos Marines such depth is that like you can have just Chaos Demon armies and things like that. So this year they're going to be adding to the Chaos stuff, and I don't want to talk about too much of the tabletop and things like that. But last week you missed what I was saying would be like one of the perfect, most mind-blowing games, and it's based off of that book. Like, imagine playing like Caveman Simulator, and you're like, you know, I'm going to kill a deer and all this other stuff, and like you're super strong, you're like the leader of the tribe, and that's like the first 60% of the game. And then the Imperium shows up, and then you're now doing like the training for like to become a Space Marine.
Yeah. So I read Fulgrim was the one where I was like, ooh. And then I read
No one likes Fulgrim, by the way.
Then the next book I thought was great. So that's where I'm at right now, and I'm towards the end of that one.
You have 48 more to go.
Yeah, I'm on my way, buddy. I keep forgetting how long these podcasts are getting now, so I'll just quickly go through what I watched this week. I want to get through all of the Harry Potter movies. I don't even know what I've seen before, but I'm trying to get Mila, which is my Sam's 8-year-old daughter, into the whole thing. She doesn't get it, and she has a really hard time when I read her the books with the English accents and the way they phrase things. And then, it carried over into the book. She's like, they're talking really weird. I have a hard time. So I had to like pause it and explain to her over and over, like different parts, but she's enjoying it for sure. Just almost based on the visuals that,
Can she read Spanish? I mean, can she read in Spanish?
She can read it in English and Spanish. Yeah. But,
they make Harry Potter in Spanish, just the books. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but I'm getting totally legal torrents of these movies. So there's no Spanish.
I'll help you out.
There's no Spanish totally legal torrents. And so that's where we're at. And so just quickly, I think the first, they're longer than I remember. They're 2.5 hours each, the first two. I don't know if that continues throughout the whole series. No,
they get shorter, but that's, I've talked about this before where I've been trying to watch the Harry Potter series as well, and I can never even begin it because the first movie is over 2.5 hours. I think like the director's cut is like 2:45 or something.
Yeah. And that's might be what I have, the director's cut or what we watched. It wasn't bad. My big gripe with the whole thing was like the first 15 minutes of the first movie is like half of the book. I'm like, why did they decide to dissect that? And it was really hard for me to get that nasty taste out of my mouth where like, oh man, they missed so much stuff, which, you know, it's a tale as old as time. Movies aren't as good as books, but as the movie got, you know, at the later half of the book and movie, it was more drawn. They paid more attention to that part. So it was good. Cutting the first part was, I guess, worth showing more of the second half. The second one was better. I hope that it keeps going this way. I hope, you know, it just keeps going upward. I haven't seen 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 ever. So now that I'm on vacation this week, I hope to get into them and hopefully I like them more. Not that they're bad movies. I would definitely watch them with a kid. And then other than that, I've been watching Blown Away 2. Sounds like some action movie, but it's just about glass blowing. It's a reality show where like 12 people who blow glass and do glass work get together, and there's a competition. I watched the first season in like 2 days, and I watched the second season in 2 days. It's so good. I don't know. I like reality shows when it's competitions. The reason that I like reality competition shows is at least at some point it's real. If somebody's better than somebody else at something, it's going to eventually show. You know, sometimes the producers stick their noses when they're where it doesn't, it shouldn't be. But for the most part, the reality in reality competitions is better than just regular reality television. Does that make sense?
I got something for you in this aspect. Have you ever heard of the show Forge and Fire?
Yeah, they make, what do they make?
So it's blacksmithing.
Yeah.
It's like the first challenge is like, make a Bowie knife. And then like four people make Bowie knives and then they test them out in front of them. And you'll see like these like people like, I've been making knives for 37 years. Or like the other guy's like, I've been making knives for 12 years. And like, they're like, oh, you know, they're talking all this stuff and talking all this shit. They're like, I made over 1,000 knives. And like this guy makes like a knife and he hits a piece of bamboo and it shatters in like 1,000 pieces. He's like, shit.
Or, shit. Like,
and like, it's actually really good. And like the way that they do like the winners kind of thing, where they have like a champion kind of moment where they're like, yeah, you know, hey, these guys won last season and they're participating now too. And they have like themed episodes. But the cool thing, it's like, you make knife, they test knife, right? And then they're like, you two are now gone, because every episode's four people.
They literally made those things. You can't fake that part of it. Yeah.
And it's like, you two are eliminated, these two remain, right? And so these two guys, they're like, all right, you guys have to make a weapon from history. And like, you get this dude from like Bossy's like, he's just, I can't do a Bostonian accent right now, but he's just like, I've never made a katana before in my life. And then meanwhile, you get this other person's like, I've been making Japanese katanas all my life. Yeah. And then they have to test them and stuff. And it's like, you realize that people are lied to when they're taught these things and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And like, or they just have no idea, or they've been lying the whole time, or they're just insanely good.
Dude, I challenge you and Leslie to watch this and not like it. I challenge you.
We'll watch it. We watched the barbecue one. We watched the whole season in 2 days.
Yeah.
Like, we're on this shit. Leak
again. Let's move on.
All right, Nick, you want to talk about Storybots here? Last thing you got on the list?
Last thing I got on the list, Storybots. If you're a dad and you have a kid that's, like, below the age of 8, this show is incredible. It started off as a YouTube channel back in 2012. Emilio's leaving and I'm mad because this is something for him to show Mila and Luna. It's a show, like I said, started on YouTube in 2012. But there's these little robots, right? And then they're called the answer bots. And what they do is they answer questions that kids ask and write in. And like, they're the most vague questions in the world. They're like, how do eyes work? Right. And these robots will go into either like alternate universes, or we'll go to a setting that kind of would explain in a very specific manner how things work, right? And so, like, they explain where chocolate comes from, because, like, just some random kid is like, where's chocolate come from? And they like, explain fermentation to kids, and it's very, like, it's catchy, first of all. Second of all, the animation's great, and the animation changes every episode. So sometimes it's claymation, sometimes it's stop motion, sometimes it's this and that. And that's supposed to represent like different universes and stuff. And it's so good. Like, my 6-month baby is like hooked on it. But like, they explain so many different concepts. They explain like how money works, for example. They're like, money's a currency that it shows value. And you'd be like, this is way too advanced for kids, but it's perfect.
It's called Storybots.
Storybots. Yeah, and it's funny too. Like, even as an adult, it's funny. It's on Netflix. Yeah.
Never heard of it. Let me check that out.
Dude, well, you just missed my whole explanation, so you're gonna have to watch it. Essentially, it's the greatest kids show in the last 10 years.
All right, cool. Check it out.
Check it out. Yeah, you guys don't know I have a 3-year-old, so.
Oh, dude, nice. They'll love it. They'll love it. Like that guy right there, the boss, fucking hilarious. Like he's like always yelling. He's like, he's picking up the phone because he's like the lead answer bot. And they're like, he's just be like, turkey sandwich, bologna, like monkeys on a tree. And that's how he sounds. Like he's got like this weird voice. And eventually when he gets overwhelmed, he calls in the answer bots, which is like who you guys are seeing right now. And they answer kids' questions, and it's hilarious.
Good idea for a show. All right, Steve, talk to us about Microsoft's Flight Simulator.
Yeah, I'll keep it brief, just talking about what we've passed. I've gotten to that point, I'm sure all of us here being PC gamers have done that before, where you start modding a game and spending more hours doing that than actually playing it. Mm. And I've hit that part of Microsoft Flight Simulator. So really, we talked at the start of the show about simming and all that kind of stuff. I really enjoy it, but this kind of goes more to just my interest in tinkering, automobiles, anything like that, electronics. So the way that they've built their flight model, it actually does give you the ability, if you find a real world engine, you can get the specs of that, and you could transplant engines, you could transplant avionics and things in the game. So I've been doing a lot of that over the past week. So if any of the listeners are into mods for Microsoft Flight Simulator, be it, changing up aircraft or making upgrades, check me out on YouTube. I'll have some links to mods that I've released over the past couple weeks on there coming up soon.
Steve, I'm a little confused here. So are you talking about modding the software, or are you modding your engines inside of the game, like tinkering on the hardware?
Yes. I would say it's more of the coding, because the coding is what drives the simulation of the engine hardware. So, I'll pick an aircraft and it's going to have an engine that it says it has, and then you'll go into that engine.xml file or whatever it is, the config file for it, and it have things like, oxygen pressure, gallons per hour, efficiency tables, the gear ratios, all the stuff that you really tinker with. If anybody's ever put up a car on a test bench before, you're tuning it. Same stuff for an automobile or, an engine that goes into an aircraft. So really doing that.
Gotcha. Man, so, but you're spending more time doing that than the actual flying.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because it's that whole game of, especially if you toss a whole bunch of mods in, you got to see if they actually work. Something's broken, you got to go and tinker with making sure this becomes compatible with this. So especially right now, this game, Microsoft, I won't say it's closed off, but there's a legitimate business unit that does add-ons for the, for the game. And Microsoft, they have these relationships with the aircraft manufacturers, so they have to be very protective of what they can allow in the game. But that's where the tools come in that the community makes to kind of go in there and make things more to how you like them.
You tinker with the automobiles in real life as well?
I have in the past. I used to have a Mustang. I used to have a Chevy S10. Back in the day when I was, kind of when you have cheaper cars, you can play with them a lot more. But I'm an adult and I've got to have the family vehicle. I don't really do it as much. But yeah, back in the day, I used to get under the hood and mess with all of that.
Dude, so I've been looking into it a little bit. So I've got this, I have a Colorado. It's a diesel, turbo diesel, right? So there's a lot of like things where you could mess around with tuning. You can get an intake exhaust just like any other car. But then you can get the chip, right? So I'm looking at these chips and it's like, you're going to get 10 more horsepower. You're going to get better gas mileage. You're going to be able to tow more, and also higher top speed. I'm like, if I could get all that shit, why wouldn't the dealership do that? Like, why not the dealership, but the manufacturer? Why wouldn't they include that? Because it lowers the overall lifespan of the engine down, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah, that's that. And also what you said, probably in conflict. Someone said, when they say you can get horsepower and better gas mileage, that's probably a lie. It's probably one or the other. Usually you're tuning in to either make it more efficient or to make. But yeah, that's really the reason why. It's just, you think about, when they have to get certified for, every manufacturer wants to be able to promote the best gas mileage that they can. So that's a real big reason for why they undertune cars a lot. Plus, I'm sure there's like some insurance liability things in the background of, with speed governors and things like that.
Yeah. for sure.
Yeah, but it's I wish I had the time to just pick up like $500 cars and trucks and really fuck around with them like I used to.
Yeah, you do. Yeah,
that's where racing chips came from, was to remove governors in the first place.
Yeah,
yeah, it was like the first thing, right?
Yeah, that's usually most people, they'll start there, you know, with tune, and you'll go just get a new chip or go do a flash or something first, and then you'll look at actually changing out parts.
Oh, and what I meant was, like, I explained it wrong. There's four different settings for my truck. You could go with a higher towing, higher, you could go just fucking flipping a switch. I can gain 40 horsepower on a 120 horsepower truck. It's crazy. You know, yeah, that's nice. Huge, huge. And they're like, don't use this unless you're just trying to show off in the proper conditions or whatever. But yeah. It's fucking awesome. Yeah. I think I might do it because it's really hard to ruin a diesel engine. Yeah. Anyway.
Built for life. So that's what I've been playing. Also, just a real quick plug. Everybody should watch The Expanse. That's it.
The Expanse. I feel like people have been talking about that in Discord. The Expanse.
Yeah,
Bobby, you would love The Expanse. It's space travel, but realistic. Yeah. Like, humans haven't discovered faster than light travel, and it deals with a lot of like politics and stuff, and it's actiony, and it's pretty good.
Neil deGrasse Tyson was on Rogan, and he asked him, like, who got it right? And he's like, The Expanse has done the math, and they get all of their science right. All of it's like how it actually would be.
Yeah. They started on sci-fi, got canceled, and then Jeff Bezos' son was actually a fan of it, and he convinced his dad to buy it. And ever since they've come to Amazon, like, you could tell that they've just been throwing money at it because the production quality is through the roof now.
It does make the first season kind of hard to watch, though.
What an idiot, dude. If I was Jeff Bezos' son, I'd just be like, Dad, I really like whores, like mountains and mountains of whores. He'd be like, okay, son. But somehow he got a television show instead.
Why not both?
Yeah, why not both? Why not mount
it? I'm Jeff Bezos' son, and this is my show about banging whores. We're going to test out a model every day, and I'm going to give you a report.
Oh, my God. Talking about reality television, Sam started watching, like, Bling Empire, which is, like, super rich Chinese Asians, I think.
I see the ad play every time I turn on Netflix. Oh, my God.
It's so hard to watch it. I'm like, I think they just paid for themselves to get a Netflix. Like, I think they have so much money, they just paid for themselves to be on TV.
Seems a little self-indulgent.
Yeah.
All right. It's time for listener questions.
Listener questions.
First one is from Afro Dragon. He asks, What game maps could you never forget, even if you wanted to? Mine are Zelda Ocarina of Time and most Halo multiplayer maps and Skyrim.
Saying Skyrim is deep, dude. Like, that's such a big map. You can't remember the whole fucking thing. But, like Dust 2, you're never forgetting it. You know every corner of, like, Dust 2, or what are the other ones, Bobby? The other common ones?
Aztec.
I don't know. I don't play Counter-Strike.
Office.
Yeah, Aztec, yeah. Office, Inferno, Train.
Yep. So there's all those. Let's see. EverQuest, I will never forget, like, going out of Kinos, I believe it was. And how you had to make your way up through the Barrens, North Barrens, South Barrens. Or is that... Wow. I'm fucking up my names. The Barrens is...
That was WoW. Yeah, for the Horde. Yeah.
All of that. I know every single corner of that stuff.
Hmm. Yeah, WoW maps are pretty ingrained. At least the old ones, because they actually changed the map a lot. And then with Cataclysm, a lot of things shifted.
Yeah.
But a lot of old maps that I played, like in... Dark Forces 2, Jedi Knight, Canyon Oasis. That's like the dust of Forces 2.
Steve's like, I play Flight Simulator, so I know the real world. the entire thing.
Yeah.
Nah. Now, for me, the facility from that, and probably Vice City, like, just, I think I had that one. I could still remember taking those strolls at the the whole coastline there.
Shout out to Zig Joe in the chat saying customs from Escape from Tarkov.
Oh, it's sweaty.
So I don't know, man. Any like new games? I just don't put the time in to really.
Yeah.
You know, it's like old. I don't know. I guess not enough time has passed. Like if you talk to yourself in 20 years and see if you remember like stuff from Tarkov, then yeah, maybe it left a lasting impression, but it's hard to tell now. Like I can definitely tell you like, you know, maps from Day of Defeat. I totally remember because I remember it specifically, and it's really, God, that game was so great. Like you fight for every inch of turf on that. So you really get familiar with that map.
So fun fact, in video games, I feel like my sense of direction is pretty good. Like, I know where I'm at. I mean, usually know where I need to go or where I've been. And so, you know, I don't have too bad of a time. But in real life, I walk around the tree and I'm like, I've never been here before. I'm terrible sense of direction. I don't know what that means about me, but yeah, that's a true fact.
Yeah, everyone's got GPSs in their phone now anyway. You don't really need to know how to get anywhere.
Thanks, Bobby. I'm going to rely on that.
Yeah.
Next question from Scram TX. He says, I almost always turn music off in games unless it's a particularly atmospheric game like Little Nightmares, Ori, or Subnautica. Kind of makes me sad to do this because 8-bit music was from my childhood games was so iconic. But often now it feels like the music gets in the way of a game. How do you handle music in games?
I don't notice it most of the time. And if I do notice it, it's either really bad or really good. So I feel like if it's right where I don't notice it, it's doing its job. It's influencing the scene. I'm like, whoa, this is really good, then yes, it does overpower the game. And if I don't notice it at all, I've never turned the music off, I don't think, ever on a game.
Oh, that's weird. I turn it off all the time. Well, multiplayer games, I always turn the music off. Deep Rock, Killing Floor, like any game where you can have an advantage from hearing more clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I turn it off. Any multiplayer off Deep Rock, game.
You're right.
But
same thing for me. It's anytime multiplayer game, I'll turn it off. The one thing that I do, I'll turn off music, is in games where it gives you an advantage in single player. Like, for example, in some games, like when you alert something, the music will change. Mm-hmm. Or like in Dead Space, the music will change. You're like, why does the music change? Oh yeah, there's enemies coming that if you didn't change them, I mean, if you had the music off, you would not know. It's a little bit more atmospheric.
Yeah. Yeah. They use it as a cue that it's to like the alertness of enemies or that enemies are incoming.
If you turn the music off in Doom, you're a Nazi, basically. Like,
oh yeah, no, that's
so yeah, you can't do that. All time. I don't know who it was. I want to say it was like Warconius or like Mobius. I think it was Mobius that said that the music in Doom is a buff. And I was like, yeah, it fucking is, dude.
I was playing Killing Floor 2 on Friday with some people, and I noticed, because I always have the music turned off, and that's a game where they put a lot of effort into the music. It's like Deep Rock. I kind of feel bad for turning it off because the soundtrack is such a key part of the game. But I had it off, and we were playing a level, the mall level, and I noticed that the Muzak was going, like, you know, kind of elevator music that they play at a lot of malls, and I was like, huh, I never realized that before.
Because that was part of the ambiance of the
level. Of the map. Even though I had the music in the game turned off,
right, it was coming out of the speaker in the level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. Mavenstar asks, "What are some of your?"
Whoa. We didn't get Steve's opinion on
it. Okay.
Oh, okay. I'm the same as you guys. I turn it off for multiplayer games. I do like some, like Warzone. It kind of kicks up volume whenever you get into the internet circle. But like Bobby said, it really. It's a disadvantage. It's best to just turn it off for multiplayer games.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of unfortunate how that works.
Like, yeah, it is unfortunate.
Yeah. Shout out to that music.
Mavenstar asks, what are some of your favorite Easter eggs in video games, like the skulls in Halo or getting the Hadouken in Mega Man X?
Oh, good one, dude. Yeah. You do a certain thing in Mega Man X and you talk to the professor, and he has a bandana on, and you're like, what are you getting here? And then, yeah, you do the actual fireball motion, and you throw a Hadouken. It kills anything in one hit. It's like, it's a cheat, basically.
It's pretty incredible for a Super Nintendo game. I mean, nowadays, you have some games that are just nothing but Easter eggs and references. But back in those days, it was very rare. Well, a lot more rare. But I don't know. I always think of the Dark Forces 2. There's a part in the third level, I think it is. If you manage to sneak your way into a house, which is kind of hard to get into, Sam and Max. There's a 3D model of Sam and Max sitting in there because it was a LucasArts game. So, of course, you know, they're putting an Easter egg of their own stuff in there.
Yeah.
I always thought that was really cool.
Like Naughty Dog, when I played Last of Us 2, they find some guy's bunker and he has porn in there. And one of them, I'm going to fuck this up, but it's like Smash My Bandicoot instead of Crash Bandicoot. It's like, Trash My Pandic, whatever it is. It was like, oh, shit, like very small amount of people are going to get this one, but it was good.
Well, I don't know, man. Crash Bandicoot, everyone knows that one.
Do they? Dude, of our
our age.
No, yeah. I don't think so.
Well, they've got a new Crash Bandicoot coming out on Steam, don't they? Or no, that was Ratchet and Clank.
Yeah.
But no, they had like the package, the re-release of like all the games.
Sure, it doesn't mean that young people are going to buy a re-release.
I think a lot of people know who Crash Bandicoot is. He's iconic, man. He was like their icon for the longest time.
I don't think so.
Okay, well, like, what do you think? 12-year-olds are playing Last of Us Part 2?
Yeah.
I don't know about that. I don't think they got the patience for that kind of game.
Anyways, what do you guys got?
You want to go first, Steve?
Sure, I can go. I got a couple. I guess one that I really like back in the...
I think we're losing. I think you're cutting in and out there a little bit, Steve. Let me...
Mic check.
Okay, yeah, you're good now.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if you guys remember the old NBA Jam game.
Oh, yeah. Bill,
lockable character. I like that.
Oh, yeah. Bill Clinton. I remember that.
Yeah. One more recent. I think it was the first Animal Crossing that came out on GameCube. It had a feature where inside the game, they had a bunch of old NES games that were actually playable in the game. So that was pretty cool.
Hmm. Yeah, I've seen that done a few times. God, what was the game? There was some game that had a full playable version of Maniac Mansion, and it was a LucasArts game. And that's why, you know, Maniac Mansion was like one of the old LucasArts games, or at least on the Scum Engine.
Wolfenstein had the entire Wolfenstein.
You play through Wolfenstein in it. Yeah, I've seen that done a few times. That's a cool little feature.
Yeah, I like that. You know, it goes back to their history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That I can't really... Oh, go ahead, Nick.
For me, my two favorite of all time is in Dead Space 2. If you do one of the hardest achievements in the game, which is beating the game without saving, or you only get 3 saves, and the enemies are super hard, you get a foam finger, and every time you shoot it, Isaac goes, bang, bang, pew, pew, and it kills everything in one hit. They explode.
That's very similar to Resident Evil, where if you did the similar thing, you go through with just a knife. I think you get the golden gun or something like that, or you have to play the game as a piece of tofu. That was on Resident Evil 2. That's old school shit.
Yeah.
And then the other one is it's 2 Easter eggs in the same game, and it's in Metal Gear Solid 3. If you... are facing the end, which is like the old sniper, which is considered like the greatest sniper since like World War One and all this stuff. If you're playing in the game, it's obvious that he's like dying of old age. And if you fast forward your game time by several months or your console time by several months and you load your save, he dies. Hmm. He just dies of old age.
Hmm.
And then
that was a really cool one.
I think I remember the other one. I've heard of that one. No, I was just saying, I've heard of that one.
I think in Far Cry, what was the Far Cry before Far Cry Primal? I think it was Far Cry 4.
Mm-hmm.
You could find archaeological reminiscence of Primal, even though Primal hadn't come out yet. because it was based on the same engine. There was this one place in the in a lake where you can go and find like a saber tooth binding a caveman, and I ended up really liking Primal, so I really enjoyed that little shout out.
Same map, same engine, by the way.
Yeah, same map, same. I guess reef surface map, right?
It's the same exact map. It's just all the textures are different.
Yeah, textures. Like, yeah.
And then my
good
other
for
part
them, by the
to
way.
My, huh?
Good for them. Like, you know, you made another game, in my opinion, probably better than the original game. You have to do all that work over. Mm-hmm. That's
pretty much Ubisoft's thing with Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
Just reuse all the assets.
And then the other part of my answer for that Metal Gear Solid one is actually something that Clown Lawson just typed, is that in Metal Gear Solid, there's a scene where you're like infiltrating an area and you're not really supposed to be able to see the characters. And if you take a left turn while you're in like a river, you can see the characters that are talking, and you can actually snipe the end while he's in his wheelchair, and then you don't even have to fight him as a boss battle. And he's the only character that you can really shoot on the screen, but if you shoot him, nothing really goes off or anything, and you can run away, but you skip his boss battle completely.
It's like Far Cry 3, where like at the very beginning of the game, the guy says, "Wait right here." If you actually wait, you win the game. He just gives you the whole. He's like, "Oh, you know, your parents died, and you're the fucking champion." You're like, "Oh, yeah, hey, fucking
four,
cool."
Actually,
or four.
Yeah.
He's like, "Yeah, cool, man." You and that's it. The fucking credits roll, and you win the game. But if you get up and start looking around, then you play the whole game.
All right. Next question. This is from Nick. Listener question from Nick. Okay.
Nick, you can't do this, Nick. You just raise this. All right, let's go.
He said, or he asks, what gets your dad boner going? For example, I love painting and VW Beetles, and some dads get boners from trains or tools.
Yeah, it's like, what do you obsess about? Like, you know, that, like, you, like, I wouldn't say you hide from your loved ones, but you're like, this is all me. Like, this is just me. Nobody else is disturbing me on this. This is just me.
Doesn't happen, dude. For me, basically work. If I'm at work, I get so involved at work. I gave my whole fucking life. Go to Real Life Share, and you can see we finished the project. I'm on the general contractor, so we get everybody together and get the shit done. And it's done, and I walk it away. But yeah, my life is completely absorbed over there. You know, working 10 to 12 hours a day, every day, 6-7 days a week. So there's no room for something else. I wish there was. And if it was, it would probably be drugs and whores. So maybe it's better that I'm working.
Wow. Okay. I don't know, man. Yeah, I don't know if I can. I'm so busy, and it seems like the things
you're not an audiophile, or you don't have any, like, you don't collect shoes or nothing. Like, what? Like, you got to have something you enjoy doing that's not video games or like having.
No, I've been through a lot of phases. I go through a lot of phases, but yeah, man. I mean, my days have been pretty slammed, and I start classes next week, and I'm like so worried about that. I have no idea how this is going to go, but I've been spending a lot of time, seriously practicing the piano. I mean, I've been doing it for years, but I've been a little bit more strict about getting the time in to actually practice and work hard on it. So I don't know. We'll see how long that interest lasts until something else I find interesting comes along.
What about you guys?
What about Steve?
Yeah. So mine is so random, but I've recently gotten into like nature very big. I've got a patio that looks out to a lake, and I don't know why, but it's like randomly one day. I think it was, I don't know if either of you guys watched that octopus documentary, but I think from watching that, it just like gave me this whole new found compassion for animals. So I went out and bought like this huge 20-pound bag of outdoor wildlife feed. And like now every morning I sit out there before I head off to work, and I've got squirrels and birds all chirping and hanging around. And like, that's just brought me so much peace that I didn't really ever think that.
That's awesome, dude. Yeah. You're like the pigeon lady from Home Alone 2, dude.
Dude, I feel like that. Like one morning I was out there, my girlfriend came in. I was playing the squirrel call on my phone. I was like, yeah, I'm that guy now. You know, that's kind of what I do.
Yeah, dude, I love that. That was the best story. That was, you win. If this question was a competition, you win.
It's so random, though, but I don't know, man. It's just something, being one with nature just brings me this peace, because everything else I do is so, you know, we're all PC gamers, obviously, so we're around tech probably half the day. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to have something so removed from that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty easy to not see the effect that has on you, too. Like, if you spend a lot of time around dealing with technology, definitely imprints on you, probably not in a good way. All right, final question from Frick. This not really a question here, but he had a comment. He says, listening to the recent podcast where Chi talks about playing RE7 on her VR setup. Sadly, it's only playable on PlayStation VR. I found that out the hard way.
I don't want to play scary. I don't want to play scary games, period. And I double don't want to play them on fucking VR, dude. I'm just not going to do it. You can't make me. I'm a grown-ass man. I'm probably bigger than you. I'm going to push you away with your VR. I don't want it. I don't want it. Get away from me.
Scary games are a little intense on VR.
I got a little segue question there for you, Bobby. Playing GTFO, do you encounter a lot of players that play that in VR?
In VR, no. So I haven't really been playing with a lot of randos lately. It's been pretty steady that me, JP Diddy, who else? Maven and Nick have been playing.
Oh, together. Thanks, Bobby. I'm just right here.
He's literally right there. Who's that guy? Who's the guy that always
dude, it's not my fault that you go by like three different names, dude. You got like your Steam name, your Discord name, and then your real name.
My Steam name and my Discord name are the same thing.
No, one's a deputy, dude.
I got to change that.
But yeah, we've been playing consistently, and because of that, I haven't been playing with any randos. Fastidious, old friend of the show, has been really interested in joining, and I always tell him, sorry, man, full group. But, you know, if someone can't make it at any time, we've got to fill. I don't know, man. I feel like I'm kind of missing out, because the whole rando experience, I think, is good for a lot of games, just to see what the community is like. And the one time that I did play with other people, it was actually pretty good. Like, they were communicating, they were taking it seriously, and they were trying really hard, and they were more knowledgeable in the game than I was. But I don't think I've ever ran into anyone who's played it in VR. I would be worried that it would put you at a disadvantage, because when things get crazy in that game, like, you've really got to land those headshots. Like, it's super important that you land those shots, get those kills, and play everything just right. There's not a lot of room for error in that game. And I don't know. I think VR is just not like the best way to play a lot of like a first person shooter.
Yeah.
Like that. Like, just seems like you'd be more accurate.
I think it comes down to the player, because, like, you know, I think of Control Pairs. Like, when you watch his VR streams, the accuracy he has when he's shooting is insane. So I think some of that, you know, like, if you're actually trained gunsmith, it probably helps you out. But yeah, I was just curious, because I bought GTFO last year around Halloween time simply because of the VR, and I just never got into it. But it looked like it'd be kind of a frightening experience, you know?
It would be. I mean, I don't know how scary. It'd be more scary in VR, that's for sure. But I don't really think of it that much as a scary game, because you're playing with three other people and you're constantly talking. It kind of takes away from the, you know, that feeling of being alone and surrounded and helpless.
And the more you play it, the more familiar you get with everything as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you guys all playing next week? All right. No, I'll talk about what I'm playing. I'll be trying to finish The Last of Us 2. I'm on vacation.
You have another 30 hours, bro.
Yeah, it's a little different. I'm on vacation next week. I do have a lot on my plate. I'm, you know, all the things that I've been putting off for months because I've been working so hard. I'm going to be getting around to things, you know, life things, taxes for like the last 2 years, shit like that. And, it's trying to get that out of the way and, you know, spending time with the family and stuff, but also, yeah, video gaming. So, Last of Us 2. And right now, you know, I haven't been in the world that much. So in the video gaming world. So I really want to get back to Hades, man. I really want to get like, I want to unlock more shit. So, but unfortunately, it's going to be the more of the same out of me, unless something pops up that I had no idea was coming out. Hmm. Sea of Thieves with you guys, dude. Sea Bobby, you've been talking about that, dude. I'll do that.
Yeah, we had some people on Discord playing today. That would be cool. Generation Zero is part of a Humble Bundle right now, and you can, for like $10, you can get that and a whole bunch of other games. World War Z, Life is Futile, Genesis Alpha 1, which I don't really know what that
game
is. A lot
of open world games.
Yeah, it's like a survival bundle, I think. But Generation Zero, I know, is a game that some people on Discord have wanted to play, and I've been meaning to pick it up at some point. And that's a great price. Game's ordinarily $25. You can get like a whole bundle for $10. So I may check that out. And I also may check out The Pedestrian, because that's a game that's just been coming up a lot lately as a really good puzzle game. And it's on sale right now, I think, for like $12 or $13, down from $20, I think. So it might be the right time to check out that game.
Nice. Yeah, I just pulled up that bundle, too. Man, there's a couple other gems in there. You got World War Z, but also Mad Max. That was such an underrated game.
Yeah, Mad Max is so good. So.
Yeah.
So for $10, that's like a no-brainer to pick up, folks.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I already have a lot of those games, but you know, you can always give them away, I suppose.
Yep. Yeah.
Gift them.
Nick,
I'm going to be playing Rust because of the forced wipe, and on my server we're doing the caveman mode, where for the first 3 days you can't build a workbench, so that means you're just using spears and bows and arrows and clubs and stuff.
So basically Rust 1, or the first iteration of Rust.
Yeah, exactly. And then I might squeeze in some Last of Us, but I promised Daze last week that I would finish her models, or finish the models that I started painting that she gifted me. But this time, I really promise I'll even lose sleep just to get it done. But yeah.
Speaking for Bobby, Steve, Nick, and myself.
We didn't get Steve's answer. God damn it, forgetting Steve.
He's not used to me being here. It's okay. So I'm going to continue playing Everspace, probably beat. I want to go back to Hades. Not yet beaten it. I've gotten pretty far, but not yet beaten it. I think I've only got like maybe 5 hours in the game total, but I picked it up based off the recommendation from you guys, and it just really lived up.
You enjoying it?
To all the hype. Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
And I'm not even a roguelike guy at all. Like, Everspace was probably the first one that I actually enjoyed, and then this, but it's just the, I don't know, man. It just,
not everything.
There's some games that just everything clicks, everything fits well. Yeah. This is one of those. And like just the little touches of like the humor and the narrative stuff, like whenever you meet in, you know, you're meeting your uncles and your aunts and stuff, like all that stuff's really cool. So love it.
Cool. So now, speaking for Bobby, Steve, Nick, and myself, Rusty Titties, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Finger snaps.
I like it, Nick.
Our outro is so long.
It's cool.